STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hi there, this is Melinda the Enforcer, and I'm with Greg Kokel, and keep your fingers to yourself and out of my face. And this is the STRS podcast.
I just want to see how flappable you are under pressure, you know, as you can be professional and just move right forward.
I can be professional. The big question is, can you? Apparently not. So I will continue to be the professional. This is the STRS short podcast. Ethics, Values, and Religion in bite-sized pieces. Greg's on a timer, 4 minutes or less. He's making faces right now, sticking his tongue out. Anyways, we post new episodes Mondays and Thursdays, and you send us your questions on Twitter. You say, stop it. That's disgusting.
Well, you said this stuff isn't going to be on camera because Brooke's going to edit this out, so I can do whatever I want. It's all right.
Yeah.
Okay, who's first?
FYI, being this close to you, you need to do a little personal hygiene in the nasal area, okay?
In the navel area?
Nasal area. I'm close to your face. So anyways, send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRAsk. And here's the first question. Stop it. It comes from Anna Yu.
I'm ready. Calm, and collected.
What made you become a Christian?
The Holy Spirit.
I knew.
I mean, that's a simple answer.
True,
and
it is.
Given the way the question was asked, that's my conviction. And I'd like to say that there was no. I wouldn't. It would be convenient in some ways to say that there was this line of reasoning that really brought me to Christ. And we know many people, J. Warner Wallace, Abdul Murray, Nabil Qureshi, I mean, people who had visible conversions, visible because they talk about them and they have written about them. And that was the case. They were working through these issues, and there were points at which significant people with significant ideas prevailed upon them with these ideas. So there were apologetics all over the place. But in my case, there wasn't anything like that. My younger brother, Mark, 2 years my junior, persistently shared the Lord with me and gave me content and substance, but I don't recall anything about any apologetics in particular. Nothing stands out for me. And my sense of that fall, 1973, when I became a Christian was that I just had an increasing awareness that this was true and that I wanted to receive Christ and follow Christ.
Were you convicted of your sin? Did you
feel
conviction?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't shamed.
Because the thing that pushed you over the edge, not to make a pun here, was that image of sinners being thrown into the hells of fire.
Well, this is a chick track that I found in the bottom, and that didn't push me over the edge, but
it was
a factor.
Thing.
Yeah, it was there in that time when I'm really considering this, and it really got my attention. And what got my attention about that tract was that there were consequences to this decision. It wasn't just a matter of maybe I won't, you know, maybe chocolate, maybe vanilla, you know. There was a lot at stake here with this, and that's what impressed me at that time. But again, it was just this growing sense that this was true and this was for me. And it wasn't until after I became a Christian, those first couple of years, where a whole bunch of these other issues started falling into place for me. And I remember reading Francis Schaeffer, who took a more philosophical approach to some of these issues. And as I was maybe at my second, first, maybe, yeah, into my almost my second year as a Christian, reading Schaeffer and thinking and being prevailed upon in a powerful way by his thinking, and looking out the window as I was reflecting on what he'd written and saying to myself, this really is true. That is, it's true in its deepest sense. And that's something that really came on me later, after I had been a Christian and had been walking with Christ and been a part of a Christian community, So it wasn't. It was just one of those things that slowly happened. It was no one thing in particular, and ironically, there was nothing like apologetics as a part of that, in my case at least.
Next question comes from Bella Lai. Do plants have minds?
Well, I don't think so. If by a mind you mean a sense of self in which you have thoughts and beliefs and sensations and awarenesses and acts of will and intentions and things like that, these are all functions of the soul. But I take the word mind to be either synonymous with the soul or an aspect or a function of the soul, a subset. So you can have mind, will, and emotions. That's the way sometimes people use it. So it is a soulish activity. And since I don't think that plants have souls in that sense, that is, they don't have conscious selves, they are not sentient, then I would answer no to the question. Do they have minds? Is that what it was there?
Right.
Yeah, and so I'd answer no to that. Now,
there are different kinds of souls, though, and J.P. Moreland talks about different kinds of souls. And, I mean, look, I mean, animals, I think it's pretty clear, animals have souls, and they do have minds, but they're a much simpler nature, and I don't think they're self-aware. And
well,
J.P. believes that plants do have souls, because, although obviously not with a mind, because I think part of his view is that anything that is growing and living has a soul, because the sort of the blueprint, the source of life comes from the immaterial, not the physical.
So what's the Latin?
But of course, they have extremely simple souls.
Yeah, this is where, and I know about that, what you said about JP, I'm familiar with that, but this is where I think the word soul is not the right word, because I think that the way I think most people think of a soul is a conscious self, and some of the qualities that I talked about are true of conscious selves. They are sentient. Animals are sentient, and they are not self-aware in the sense that they reflect on themselves as a self.
Right.
Okay, but they are aware of themselves in a certain sense, and they're aware of their environment and stuff like that. So they have all of these sensations. So in a certain sense, they have really the same kind of thing we have, but it is much more simple, as you put it. I think in the case of plants, you have an entirely different kind of thing. You have a life principle or something that animates it. There's something substantive and real that's there, but I don't know if the word soul or mind certainly would be misleading, to use.
Yeah, he wouldn't say they have minds.
But what is the word?
I know what you
mean. Life force. I mean, it's translated life force. I can't think of it. Elan vital. Vital. Which,
that I didn't know.
Yeah, that's what he's describing there, a life force, something that animates the physical thing.
Right. Well, I think JP goes a little bit further than that, not only animates, but directs the growth and the life of this.
Right. I would include that in animating. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next question comes from Beast Robe 17.
Beast Robe?
Mm-hmm.
Like
Beast
an animal's
Robe 17.
Robe. Okay. No comment.
Okay. If God created everything, then why is there a devil?
Because God created him, just like God created man. But the devil is a being with moral freedom and is capable of using the moral freedom for ill, and that's exactly what happened. He made a decision to rebel against God, just like Adam made a decision to rebel against God.
So
neither was evil when they were made, but they had the capacity for doing evil.
Okay, next question comes from Unworthy.
That was 25 seconds.
Well, good for
that's
you.
Good. Hey.
You don't get to save it for the next one. Oh. Next question comes from Unworthy Meeple. Who was Cain afraid of would kill him? Weren't his parents the only other people there?
Well, here you have a selective account. And what I mean by that is you have an accounting of things that took place, but you don't have a full characterization of everything that was happening. There was clearly a lot of time that passed between the time that Cain and Abel were born and grew up. I guess that's what I mean. They grew up, okay, and we don't know how old they were, but there could be other children that obviously grew up and populated other areas and reproduced, and so you got multiple generations here.
Adam and Eve had more than two kids. These are just the only two that are mentioned.
That's right, and so what we have here, so it is far enough along that there can be
very least had to be a girl in there somewhere, right?
yeah. So there. I mean, there are certain limitations there, obviously, but enough time had passed so that there can be some population centers. Now, I think the text talks about cities, and we aren't to be thinking of places like Los Angeles or San Francisco. You know, cities then weren't like those metropolises.
These
were
traffic.
Aggregations of human beings that live together, and so they didn't necessarily have to be very big.
Camel pile up on the 405. Are you done?
Yeah.
So did I just interrupt
I'm
you?
I'm trying to think. I was just thinking about the camel pile.
Just pile thinking. Up. Like a oh, pile up on the 405.
I see. Oh, I see. Okay, I had a different figure in mind there.
Yeah,
picture
I know.
In mind. A camel pile. Anyway, so...
So he has... Cain was afraid of his... siblings.
Well, relatives.
Relatives. I mean, because it could be nieces, nephews, cousins by then.
How far removed,
I
don't
know. Would they have cousins? No, there wouldn't be cousins. Because his parents didn't have siblings.
That's correct.
So no cousins.
That's right. I'm trying to think of that. What is a cousin?
I know.
That's a complicated notion.
Yeah, Cain and Abel didn't have cousins.
All right. That's true.
Okay, so... just raised a question people are probably asking. It's been a long, long time since we answered this one.
Is this a new one now?
Yes. Well, it's a follow-up to this one.
Okay.
So Cain and Abel had sisters, so that's all they had to marry, right?
That's right.
Isn't that immoral and gross?
It is kind of gross, but not immoral. It couldn't be. It was the only choice you had back then. It wasn't until later that God put restrictions on it and for reasons that applied later but didn't apply then.
So incest is not objectively wrong. It's just pragmatically wrong because if it was objectively wrong, it would have been wrong at the time. I mean, just because they didn't have a choice doesn't mean it wasn't wrong, does it?
Well,
I guess there would because the Bible says there's always a way out of temptation if we take it, so...
Well, there's no way out of this one.
No, there was no options.
You know, this was the nature of things. Right. And remember, some things are objectively wrong because God declares them
to
be so, and not because they are wrong in their essential nature. And I don't know
but
all the reasons.
But in their essential grossness.
I don't know. Look at I just saw young Victoria.
I know they married their cousins.
They were cousins, you know,
right.
Albert and Victoria. So this didn't seem to be so offensive to them. So anyway,
yeah,
I think that this is a somewhat.
That's just all there was.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, Adam and Eve. Also, I mean, I also imagine Adam and Eve actually probably had a whole lot of kids, and so it doesn't mean like you were marrying a brother or sister in a nuclear family we have now that you were close with or something.
Yeah.
It was probably felt more like
not
marrying cousins
necessarily
or something.
Someone you grew up with, but, you know, I don't... It seems to me initially that something like that had to happen. You know, first-round siblings, you know, they had to get married.
There's no way around it.
I don't see any way around it, right. No. And I think my suspicion is, and I haven't thought about this a lot, but I did have somebody else reflect that the reason that God prohibited incest is not because of health reasons, because those are largely over exaggerated, but rather he prohibited it because
Tell the old pharaohs that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you interbreed a lot, you're going to have problems, which is what some royal families did. But just generally speaking, the reason is to keep sex out of the family. Exactly. Mm-hmm. This has got to be a protected area where children are not inappropriately sexualized, exploited, all of that. Exactly right.
Okay, good. All right. That's it for this episode. Send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRAsk. We enjoy the questions that come this way.
They're usually hard, though. I mean, a lot of these are more challenging than ones I get on the air. And
you only get 4 minutes.
Only get 4 minutes.
But sometimes they're very interesting. There's things come up that never occurred to me. I've never even heard the question.
Yeah.
20-some years on the regular program, and some of these questions have never come up. So it's really interesting. We have two episodes. We post them on Mondays and Thursdays, and you can find them online on STR.org and iTunes or in your STR app. I'm Melinda the Enforcer, and I'm here with Greg Kolkel for Stand to Reason.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at STR.org.